only one.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WAPC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five. Once again, it's yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, taking you home on the drive home at five to that classic tune of Joe Walsh in the City, which was the theme song for the cult classic movie The Warriors. And you pretty much have to be a warrior nowadays when taking any form of mass transit, whether it's below us 17 floors in a third world station known as Penn Station, where 700,000 people pour out of the transit hub each and every day to only return and pour back in to go home. Whether they're taking the Long Island Railroad, whether they're taking New Jersey Transit, Amtrak, or then linking up to the IRT, IND, BMT in the subway system, there's been total mishigosh. And in fact, the schmuck, no make that the putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer, weighed in on that there's money that's been put aside, $500 million, to fix the tracks in the East River Tunnel that connect Queens to Manhattan. But this is what he had to say.
I get gobbledygook. I did not get an answer. We're going to do this.
Gobbledygook? I haven't heard that since I was a kid. He then went on to say,
the erosion continues. The repairs stand stalled, and so do thousands of commuters and thousands more in the future.
And with the collapse of the hub downstairs in Penn Station, in addition, the subway system has all of a sudden faltered dramatically. Signal problems galore, rerouting trains on a regular basis, trains taken offline. It's gotten so bad that the governor himself, Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, said this about our upcoming summer.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters. You will have thousands of commuters looking for other ways to get into Manhattan.
And then he basically tried to pawn it off on the mayor. Mayor de Blasio got quite upset and said, oh, no, 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 no. When it comes to the MTA, that's a state agency.
That's a fantasy. That's absolutely inaccurate. And he said earlier in the year he was in charge and he was focused. So let's be clear. You know, there's a division of labor. It's out in the open. Let's not kid around anymore. If you have a concern, if you like something NYPD is doing or you don't like it, talk to me. You like something going on in the schools or you don't like it, talk to me. If you like something happening in our subways or don't like it, talk to the governor. He's in charge. He should just own up to it and take this responsibility seriously and put forward a plan.
And his plan is to add to the debt for Cuomo projects for the MTA that he's being criticized for, which is adding Wi-Fi to the system and rebuilding some of the stations. On the line to give us some focus on what possibly could be done is Rob Astorino. He's the Westchester County Executive, and he ran against Governor Cuomo the last time, giving him a very close race. It's assumed he may run again. And thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5, Rob.
Well, Curtis, first of all, let me start by offering my condolences with your mom. I know you and I talked very recently, and just wanted to let you know how sorry I am.
Well, appreciate that, Rob. But the governor has been playing dodgeball on all these MT-related issues. You've been analyzing it from Westchester County as the executive. How have we gone awry?
Well, let's start with his own words, right? This is going to be the summer of hell. Now, if he is in charge, clearly, we know who's in charge of hell, so does that make Cuomo Satan? Just drawing the dots here. This system...
I'll sign on to that, Rob.
This system is completely and utterly broken. And the governor likes to take credit for everything, and then when it's to blame, he runs, and he's not in charge. And, you know, kudos to Mayor de Blasio for calling him out on this, because the mayor is completely correct. Seven of the members of the MTA board are in the pocket of the governor, so he almost has effective total control. They report to him for the day-to-day operations, basically. And even I have one appointee as county executive in Westchester. But technically, my appointment has to go to the governor for his permission to put that person on the board. So he effectively controls everything. So let's not sit here and tell everyone else that they're to blame. You've got a debt problem that is blowing up at the MTA. Total debt problem. There's $32 billion in debt, I believe. And they're lopping on another 20% more on this. They've got to get the system control. And part of that, of course, is labor. You know, there's an extraordinary amount of labor, and he has given away the store on that, some would say. And so, you know, I was just in Rye the other day, and one of the Metro North trains derailed. And these are simple things that aren't getting done correctly. And so whether it's the person that he puts in charge or the governor himself, someone has to take the reins and fix this. You can't sit there on New Year's Eve and say the Second Avenue subway line, which is 100 years late, by the way, is a wonderful thing, and let's party because he did it. And now that everything is going wrong, including electrical problems, the 83rd Street station has issues, he has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, completely. But what's interesting is the governor will seek praise for putting Wi-Fi into the subway system, and this gives workers an opportunity to text ahead to their bosses to let them know they're an hour late. Or if they get stuck in one of the many tunnels and the train isn't moving, they can call 911 for help. At least they have that alternative.
You know, the biggest thing that should be mocked on late-night TV is what Cuomo said earlier this week. The governor is giving a $1 million award for anyone who is a genius who can figure out how to fix the MTA. Isn't that his job? I mean, really. We're giving $1 million to someone to try to figure out what he should be figuring out or has not done in the last 6.5 years. I mean, to me, outsourcing what you should be doing is a dereliction of duty. If you're not up for the job, that's fine. Just you can step aside and let someone else take over, because the system, as big as it is, has to be brought under control. You got to do the small things right. If you can't get the small things right, the big things are never going to fall into place. And right now, if you go into the subway, you're frustrated. If you go on LIRR, you're frustrated. There's, you know, the system has to be fixed.
Now, in addition, he keeps announcing these new capital improvement projects. So they're very dazzling. A third rail for the Long Island Railroad so that they can have some more track. A link that'll go from Willits Point, where Citi Field is, to LaGuardia, so there's a rail link there. New Port Authority building to replace the bus terminal that's at 42nd Street now. And it go on and on, and even yours, in your neck of the woods, the new Tappan Zee Bridge. But we never get answers as to how this is going to be paid for. I know you've made inquiries. Do you get any follow-up as to who is going to be paying these bills?
No, and you just hit the nail on the head, Curtis, because here's the issue. Goodies for everybody, right? Free college tuition, a Tappan Zee Bridge, which, by the way, I agree with. I think that was needed. I push for that. I give them kudos for doing that. But we've got no answers whatsoever on how it's going to be paid for. And the bridge is going to, by the way, almost open, as well as what the toll is going to be, which are going to be massive. All these things, the LaGuardia, JFK, you go on and on. They're good, huge projects that are enormously expensive, over $100 billion, I think it was, for these projects. If you've got an MTA system, which is the lifeblood of New York City and the suburbs, and that is so deep in debt and needs basic triage, how are you going on to the next things that you can't even pay for and leaving the first one behind that has to get fixed? You know, that's the issue. You're scattered all over the place throwing money around that you can't even pay for the first one.
Well, I would think the state controller, DiNapoli, would be crunching numbers on this and saying, this is impossible. This is impossible what you're hoping to do with monies that you don't even have.
Well, that's correct. But here's the other thing, though. This is one of those shadow governments, right? The MTA is a public benefit corporation. So it's not technically in the New York budget. It's its own money. It can bond its own money. It's debt. It's huge debt. And even though he effectively controls it, it's like off balance, off sheet, right? So they can rack up as much debt as they want, and they are, and they're asking for 20% more debt. That's got to be paid. So that's going to either be paid for at the tolls, at the fares when you get on. That's how it's going to be paid. It's already underpaid by the budget, right? They're not giving enough. It's got to be massively subsidized. That's going to happen, and tolls are going to have to go up, as well as the fares are going to have to go up in order to pay for this long term. If this is what his vision is, to spread $100 billion all over the place, as opposed to the money that we have and the money that we should focus on the problem. Right now, the big problem is the MTA.
No doubt. And Rob Astorino, your children, my children, and our grandchildren are going to be paying this massive debt. And again, if any of you would like to weigh in on this, feel free to do so on our commuter whiner line. Whether you take New Jersey Transit, Long Island Railroad, Metro, North, Amtrak, the IRT, IND, BMT, you call 212-613-3878. And Bob Astorino, Westchester County Executive, former gubernatorial adversary of Cuomo, ran a very effective race the last time. It's expected he'll challenge him again, has nailed this about the MTA.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
It's another day, another controversy involving the 60th anniversary Puerto Rican Day Parade set to march up Fifth Avenue on June 11th. That's a Sunday. And today's event has a published piece in the New York Daily News by Oscar Lopez Rivera, the man, co-founder of the FALN, In the Eye of the Storm. As you know, his sponsor at Medici, Melissa Mark Vivarito, Speaker of the City Council, moved to have him honored by the parade committee. He was. He is now saying, hey, skip the honors, but as a grandfather and a proud Boricua, I will be marching in this parade, but I don't need the honors. On the line to discuss that is John Ruiz. He's candidate for the city council seat, as Melissa Mark Vivarito is term limited. He's competing in that East Harlem district. He's also a ex-firefighter, and we appreciate you joining us here on the drive home at 5.
Thanks a lot, Curtis. Thanks for having me. But I got to correct you. Once you're a firefighter, you're always a firefighter. It's like a doctor. Once you're a doctor, you're always a doctor.
If
you don't turn your head, when you see trouble, you're always there.
If you happen to get elected in this cycle, would you be the first New York City firefighter to actually serve in the council?
Yes. Since its inception, the New York City Fire Department 152 years ago, there's never been a firefighter represented into public office. The answer is yes, and we need to terminate that drought.
Okay. Now, in the past, you've worked with Melissa Mark Vivarito. You're a district leader of the Democratic Club there, but you broke ranks with her over the parade. Why is that?
You know, it was tough to do that because I know this woman. I've broken bread with her once a week. We used to have dinner. I own two political clubs in East Harlem. She was part of my club. She's a district leader along with me. I was her strategist for three elections. She's a friend, and I still think she's a friend, even though she probably wants me dead. But after this, but, you know, it was tough. But right is right. I mean, you know, Curtis, this man set off a bomb in East Harlem, right across the street from my house on 110th Street in 1974. And it injured a police officer. He lost his eye. Angel Poggi was 22, 2 days on the job. And Curtis, he was a Puerto Rican. Now, according to FALN, they believe that they had no beef with the working class people, innocent citizens. They just targeted or attacked bankers, stockbrokers, and important corporate executives. what the hell were they doing in Spanish Harlem in 1974? There were none of those people living here on 110th Street or anywhere in East Harlem.
All right, but now the fact that the man in question, Oscar Lopez Rivera, has published a piece in the Daily News today, and he said, look, parade committee, I don't need your award. I don't need to be honored. I'm just going to march in this parade as a grandfather, as a proud Puerto Rican. Does that change your mind any about his involvement in the parade?
No, I question Melissa Margarito, the speaker, and everyone that has anything to do with the parade that agreed to even do this. The damage has been done. You know, the Puerto Rican Day Parade is about the accomplishments of Puerto Ricans as a people. He has accomplished nothing but brought terror to this community and terror throughout the whole city in the 70s.
Now, what would you say to both the mayor and to the public advocate, Letitia James, and to the city controller, Scott Stringer, all three who have said they're going to march in the parade, although they won't be marching along with Oscar Lopez Rivera or Melissa Mark Viverito. If you had a one-on-one conversation, what would you say to them about their involvement in the parade this year?
You know what, Curtis? Nobody in the city council stood up against her. None of the other candidates who are running for city council in my district stood up against her. I don't care. I'm not afraid of anybody. I stood up against her, even though I know her. Right is right, wrong is wrong, and they all have it wrong. And that's why somehow, some pressure, and I'm claiming this victory because her sidekick, her candidate that's also marching in the parade arm in arm with him, Diana Yala, you know, they're all just as guilty and they're all just as wrong. They don't have the chutzpah to stand up to her. And that's what a city council member needs. And this is what, as you were saying, the comptroller and the mayor and everybody else didn't stand up to her. I didn't say that word. But she looked like she was about to have a nervous breakdown. She realized that she had made the biggest mistake of all. Everybody's dropping out. You know, the Yankees, the Diario, the Daily News, you know, all these other Coca-Cola, JetBlue, Corona, everybody can't be wrong. But her arrogance of putting everybody under her thumb and under her rule has really, I think, put a period at the end of her sentence. And if she runs for anything now, I don't think she'd get elected a door catcher.
Well, question, though, she's term limited. She's out in January. So why do you think so many of these politicals, especially the 51 who have been slackers and deadbeats on this issue in the council, including the three Republicans who should have stood up to you, why do they remain so silent?
I think they're afraid of her. I think she has one last push. You know, the budget doesn't pass till the end of the month. I think they're all afraid of her because you know what she does with legislation. She's not allowing anybody to do the legislation that she wants, that they want to put in. I mean, she's just controlling all that. She's a very controlling person, and she's very vindictive, and they fear her. But, you know, just like everything else, watch January 1st of next year. Everything will come out by then because, you know, she's not around, even though she's a lame duck speaker after July 1st, after the budget passes. These people are afraid, and they, you know, we'll let the Puerto Ricans handle their own affairs, and they're not, you know, they're not stepping up forward. But you know, I don't care about that. Right is right, Curtis, and wrong is wrong, and she's 100% wrong in this. And if she ever runs for politics after this, she's not going anywhere. This is the fatal flaw in her administration.
Well, let's hope. John Brewer said you are absolutely correct because we certainly don't need the likes of Melissa Mark Viverito hanging around in any elected capacity. That's John Ruiz. He's candidate for that same city council seat that would replace Melissa Mark. Viva Libre Puerto Rico.
The Drive at 5. On the air, on the app, Curtis Sliwa, live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
Beat the Mets. Come on out and beat the Mets. I hate the Mets. I despise them. I loathe them and all of their degenerate third world fans, including our guest right now. You've heard him before, columnist for the New York Daily News, lifetime Met fan, hopelessly a Met fan, Gersh Kuntzman. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Gersh.
So not only are you a Trump supporter and a Republican, but you also love the Yankees and hate the Mets, Curtis.
Well, you're right on most of that, except I consider Trump to be a screwball, a crackpot, a manic depressive who's trying to push his agenda. Other than that, you were right about most of the other stuff.
Okay, well, I'm a Met fan. I've been a Met fan my whole life, so go ahead. Hit me when I'm down.
Okay, now I'm reading your column today, right in the front of the Daily News, page 3, okay? They gave you a good promo there. And you're basically apologizing, making excuses, and you're sorry for Mr. Met, who flipped the bird at Met fans the other day at the Brewers game.
Look, my point is, Curtis, Mr. Met is us, and we are all Mr. Met. We've all had it up to here, and right now I'm pointing to my big, oversized baseball head. We've had it up to here with all the crap that has been happening this year. First of all, with the Mets, because as you know, this season has been a debacle already. But I'm talking about other things that affect New Yorkers. The traffic. Until today, the weather in the spring was lousy. I'm talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. I'm talking about all of the things that are driving us nuts. And frankly, Mr. Met has had it. He's just had it.
Now, hold on a second. He flips off not the Brewers, the visiting team. He flips off the hometown fans, the Met fans. How do you make an excuse for his behavior?
Well, look. The guy has obviously had some sort of, like a post-traumatic stress disorder of some kind because he's been watching the Mets just play so disastrously bad. Now, also, we don't know what the fans said to Mr. Met. You know he can't talk. He's not able to talk. But you know he's got two big ears on the side of that baseball head. So they must have said something nasty.
You know, I always assume that in the day that your hero, the Italian Stallion, Mike Piazza, was roiding up in order to hit those home runs out of the old Shea Stadium, that when I looked at the head of Mr. Met, I was figuring he roided up too. That's why he was so pretentious and had such a fat head.
First of all, Mr. Met is not pretentious. Of all the things you can say about Mr. Met, he's a lovable lunkhead. I mean, he's got, first of all, Mrs. Met is quite a looker. They've got a great marriage. They've been together on and off, obviously, since 1962. So I give him a lot of credit. And second of all, Mike Piazza on steroids, that's just an allegation that I will not abide until proven.
Now, question about Mrs. Met. Weren't they estranged for a while? They were like the darling couple, you know, in the old Shea Stadium. Then when the transfer to Citi Field took place, I noticed that Mrs. Met was like out of sight, out of mind. Sometimes it reminded me of Melania with Donald Trump. Was there an estrangement period there?
Well, look, people are going to talk. And obviously, if you look, Mr. Met himself, he slimmed down a bit. He used to be kind of a chunky guy, kind of like me before I got off the apple juice. And now he's out on the town. He's flipping the bird to fans. He's letting people know he's got some attitude. I'm not afraid to say, if Mr. Met, if you're single, I got some people for you I can line you up with.
Now, I would have thought when he flipped the bird to the Met fans that orders would have come down from the Will Ponzi's, the best friends that Bernie Madoff ever had in his life, that he would be fired. And now I see he can't perform as Mr. Met any longer, but he's been reassigned to the Met staff. True or not true?
Well, true. But, you know, when you say reassigned to the Mets, they've had so many injuries this year, people have been reassigned to the minors never to be heard from again. Look, the kid made a mistake. There's a bunch of people who obviously uphold all of Mr. Met's finest traditions. And this guy, look, he couldn't handle. And Mr. Met's got a bit of a big head, so you know what? It's not easy to wear that crown.
Now, as you've been kvetching here, Gersh Kuntzman of the New York Daily News, can you give me some insight as to why you're such a masochist, why you were born and raised a Met fan, and why you don't want to be number one, second to none?
Well, first of all, it's ridiculous. You don't pick a team based on which one is leading in the standings at any given time, just like you don't pick a candidate based on the polls. I grew up a Met fan. My father was a Brooklyn Dodger fan. The Dodgers pulled out, as you know. And so you're a Dodger fan, you're a Met fan. You can't become a Yankee fan when you grow up in a Dodger household. So the Dodgers left, Mets are my team.
Yeah, but to me, and it's not always been true, obviously. They've had some stellar years. But for the most part, I look at the Mets and I look at their fans as losers. You know, like Donald Trump talked about ISIS as being losers. Yeah, what was it like growing up as a kid wearing that Met hat, walking around, and other kids looking at you like you were a loser?
Well, it was very tough because I grew up with that Met hat from like the early, the late 70s, mid-70s after the World Series appearance in 73, all the way up until like 84. They were lousy. I mean, really lousy. And then obviously those had those good years. But look, don't liken Met fans to what Donald Trump calls one of the world's terror groups. And it's just not a fair comparison. We've never killed anybody, and Mr. Met has never beheaded anybody.
So now, as the most infamous of the Daily News columnists, you are definitely a Democrat, liberal, progressive. It's right into the marrow of your bone. I'm assuming that because you have Brooklyn Pride tomorrow, you'll be rocking that Met cap at Brooklyn Pride Day, which is on Fifth Avenue in the heart of Park Slope, which is like your sweet spot, as you'll be dancing and prancing all about?
I mean, there were a lot of gay references there, and I agree. I will be doing all of those things. You didn't mention Dyke Slope, which is what we call Park Slope because of the lesbian population. But, yeah, we'll all be there.
Well, remember.
Come one, come all.
Remember, didn't I start by talking about the Italian stallion, Mike Piazza? Didn't you think I was going to lead up to that, Gersh?
Look, anytime you mention Stallion, I obviously get excited. And when you add Italian in, I think of you, Curtis.
Do appreciate that. That's Gersh Kuntzman, who was apologizing for the Met mascot. That's right, Mr. Met, who flipped the bird to his own fans the other day at the Brewers game. He's been put on the shelf. No, not fired. Just reassigned to another portion of the Wilpanzi franchise.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC. And like I have with my baby. I
just left them all, I'm getting fly with my baby. 5:51 as we continue here on The Drive home at 5. And unfortunately, this degenerate hip-hop monster, Fetty Wap, he's become the theme song for Paterson, New Jersey. First put on the map by Alexander Hamilton himself. As many of you know, having grown up there, almost everything is named after Alexander Hamilton. You could go up the hill, you can go down the hill, you could be all of a sudden on Main Street, not far from City Hall in downtown. Everything is named Alexander Hamilton. And remember, Alexander Hamilton ended up dying as a result of a duel right there in Weehawken. He's buried in downtown Manhattan, and that was eons ago. But Paterson, New Jersey, because of a series of problems, most of it inflicted upon itself by its corrupt leadership. For instance, Joey Jose Torres, a mayor who has been indicted on multiple counts, who is set to be going to prison soon for his corruption of using workers on the city payroll to do work at his own home, to do work at a business that was owned by his family, and then to lie about it. As a result of his malfeasance and malfeasance of other corrupt officials, both in Paterson and Passaic County, the city has slipped in the fiscal abyss. As a result, it's had to lay off police officers. And it is considered a gateway for people who want to come in and buy drugs. You go on I-80, you can come in from Manhattan over the GW Bridge or come in from other parts of New Jersey. It is the place to score cheap heroin, which is plentiful. And not only that, you can walk into any of the nearby tenements and there's shooting galleries galore. You have your own little locker. They got your own works, your own spike, your own needle. That's how sophisticated it is. But the other thing that it's become known for as a place where you can go to after-hours clubs. And for some of you, what is an after-hours club? It sounds like maybe a speakeasy from a different era. Well, very similar to a speakeasy. It operates after the hours that you can actually be open. Normally, it starts opening up at about 2 o'clock in the morning. They don't have a liquor license. They haven't been inspected by any of the housing authority inspectors to make sure you meet the spec, and they will pack them in. And in Paterson,
New Jersey, it's kind of easy to see where they are, except I got to believe that the officials are either getting wine-dined in pocket line by the thugs that run these after-hours clubs, or they're just completely naive and oblivious. Since it is a corrupt city, let's face it, they're being bribed. But let's take you back to last Sunday morning, where you had a total of shootings galore at an after-hours club that is just blocks away from City Hall and police headquarters. No arrests have been announced. One dead, six injured. And everybody is acting like, gee, we had no idea that this after-hours joint was active. And recently they had another situation in which two men were fatally shot at an illegal club in an industrial building on First Avenue in a totally different section of Patterson. So what did the city council president, William McCoy, say? Quote, "This is my concern. How could this happen right underneath our noses? It's a significant problem because when you have these unregulated, unlicensed operations, it can spill into dangerous situations as we've seen." Oh, this guy is a certifiable genius. And then you have the police director, Spezial, who originally was a hotshot here in New York. He went over there. He became the sheriff. He ran the jail system. And now he's the public safety director of a city, Patterson, that has no public safety whatsoever. Now, listen to the chutzpah. Listen to the Weibos, the Corleones of this guy, Spezial, to say he has not received a single complaint from a citizen about an illegal nightclub. Now, I don't know if he's on the take, but a guy from New York working the streets of Patterson who can't spot an after-hours club. Hey, Spezial, let me direct you right behind the Dunkin' Donuts at Market Street and Memorial Drive. Huh? I'll be your freaking divining rod. You can go there at night, and you can see in that strip mall, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, nut-to-butt, vehicles parked in the shopping plaza all night long. In fact, if you compare the parking late at night compared to the parking during the day, there are more people there at night than during the day. Now, where do you think all these people are going? It's called after-hours clubs. And yeah, the muscle heads are at the door. They're going to make sure that they give you a quick pat-down. Although, let's face it, they're not going to do it the same way that a typical club would do it, with the wands and the magnetic reactors to any kind of metallic that you may have on your body. But Spezial and City Council President, who is either hopelessly naive and on the take, City Council President William McCoy, what you need to do is to get into your taxpayer-provided SUVs, drive around the streets of Patterson, New Jersey, whether it's up the hill, down the hill, whether it's down on Main Street, right near City Hall and police headquarters, or in the industrial area, and check to see where people are parking their cars in the wee hours of the morning. And where there are cars, there are illegal after-hours clubs. And they're not just serving illegal alcohol. People are doing cocaine there, any drugs that you have of choice. And people are pouring into Patterson from all different parts of Passaic and surrounding areas to party hardy in the wee hours of the morning. And on occasion have shootouts. Hey, Spezial, wake up there.